Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
And welcome. You're listening to Capital Irish on Access Radio 106.1 FM. Just want to start off by saying a huge thank you to all our wonderful sponsors. That's Peter and Susie McGuinness, Hutt Valley Irish Society, Wellington Irish Trust. Thank you so much for your continuing support. So welcome today to today's show. I'm going to do something a little different this week. So as we're running up to Christmas, I was thinking a lot about traditions in my house growing up. And one of them was always to read a Christmas story in the weeks leading up to Christmas. And now my mother would always do the classics. However, my dad would always read something that was that he was more interested in. And so we had exposure to much more mature storytelling from him. We always had a book of short stories, but one of them was a book that John B. Keane had written. And today I decided to read you one of those short stories, and it's called Groodles. The decision to hold the Tubbernlaw Wren dance earlier than usual was brought about by a number of factors, the chief of which was the ominous forecast in Old Moore's almanac concerning of the dire events in early January. First would come a blizzard so dense and driving so foolhardy travellers would not be able to see their outstretched palms out of the doors. This, according to Old Moore, would be followed by short order, a deluge of rain. In the wake of these calamitous events, there would be a frost so sharp that it would freeze the bark off the trees. "I see nothing for it," Billy Bonner, the king of Tubbernlaw Wrenboys, informed his wife, "but to hold the dance tomorrow night. Otherwise, we're going to have to wait till the spring, and whoever heard of the Wrenboys dance in the springtime?" For the second factor to influence decision was a sermon delivered by the parish priest in the nearby town on Sunday. He had begun the usual way by admonishing the Wren boys, young and old. As the sermon proceeded, he whipped himself into a frenzy and he denounced the debauchery and drunkenness which were a part and parcel of such orgies. "If it comes to my attention," he said, "that a single Wren dance takes place in the new year, then woe betide the instigators. There'll be no luck in the parish to allow this sort of monstrosity activities that take place. Therefore, let it be known," he concluded with an upraise of hands and tone hoarse with fury, "that there shall come a calling if a word comes to my ear that the laws of the church and stays are being flouted. If," Billy Bonner addressed his wife, who lay beside him in bed, "we hold no dance in the new year, we'll be flouting no laws whatsoever, blazes flouting is." Beside him, his wife murmured in agreement. "I therefore propose," he declared solemnly, as if he was addressing the assembly of Wrenboys, "that we go ahead with our dance tomorrow night and have done with it." "I second that," his wife agreed, with matching solemnity. And then she placed her arms around his neck and inquired if there were any law of church and state which might prescribe an unmentionable activities which her proximity suggested. "Not that I know of," Billy replied, and took her in his arms and planted a gentle kiss on her receptive lips. Early the next morning, the king of Tubbernlaw Wrenboys mounted his ancient bicycle and went westward towards to notify the Wren boys and the Wren girls of his decision in advance of the date of the Wren dance. The decree was widely applauded. In every abode to which he called was graciously received, befitting a man of his stature. While ordinary mortals might offer a stout or a beer or even a whiskey out of the Christmas stocks, Billy was obliged to walk home leaning on his bicycle for support after the vast quantities of brandies which has been thrust upon him. Others less vulnerable in the community had business in hand. They would travel far and wide in his stead, spreading the news of the royal proclamation. There was no dissenting voices. Billy arrived back home to his house in Tubbernlaw shortly after noon. He slept for several hours before his wife deemed it prudent to rouse him from when they cavorted so wantonly the night before. The trusted deputies had already tackled the black mare to the common cart, and all three set out earnestly for the town. They would purchase wines, whiskey, cordials, minerals, and dispense two half tierces of stout, which should see them safely through the festivities, which would end at breaking of the day the next morning. Maggie Bonner had already visited the wives of two of the viceroys. There is cooked gammons, crew beans, a dozen of shop loaves, freshly baked bread, Yorkshire relish, sweet cakes, barren bracks, and it was all been safely deposited in the kitchen of the Bonner farmhouse. And presently, the preparations for the most important element of the entire proceedings would be complete. A huge cauldron rested atop a great table inside. There sat four hocks of prime beef, a stone of freshly peeled potatoes. Three females chopped great bundles of carrots and parsnip in preparation to add them to the cauldron. A stone of onions, hard and mature and uniform golf ball size, were peeled and quartered and then added. The Bonner soup was always the pièce de résistance of the Wren dance, and it was praised far and wide for its richness and sobering effects. When all the groodles had been added, the three women lifted the cauldron between them and bore it into the great fire, which burned brightly beneath the iron grid, especially designed and wrought by the local smith. The soup would be allowed to boil and simmer for the duration of the Wren dance, until all the constituents had disintegrated and become part of the mouth-watering mixture. "'Tis the groodles what does it," Billy would proclaim, as his cronies savoured the delicious mouthful of the much-lauded soup. "Groodles," he would go on to homely explain, "especially parsnips, they're the backbone of all soups. As faith without good works is dead, also soup without groodles is dead." By 8 o'clock in the evening, the guests had arrived. They were carefully vetted by Billy from his vantage point in the doorway of the house, and it was also seen by the great tomcat which sat aside the strimney. There were fiddlers, melodeon players, boron players, diddlers, courts, concertina players, comb pair, bone tippers. In fact, they were all types of traditional musicians, exponents of the hornpipes, jigs and reels. In the early part of the night, gatecrashers and known troublemakers were ejected without ceremony by the king and his faithful subjects. During these minor skirmishes, which quickly quelled several black eyes and sustained one invader's nose to be broken, otherwise the Wren dance was a harmonious occasion and enjoyed by all who attended. The intelligent officer from the local Catholic church, who was also the part-time parish clerk, in his verbal report to the parish priest, spent several minutes describing the character and nature and the consistency of the soup. "You'd want to brief the household, the housekeeper in that respect," the parish priest interjected jokingly. Only the clerk knew how serious the parish priest was. The parish clerk's report also included an account of the drinking and philandering. Although truth to be told, there was little of the latter and expected excesses of the former. They had several proposals of marriage, but since they had come chiefly from octogenarians and nonagenarians, as well as several drunken gentlemen who forgot they were already married, no notice was taken of these proposals. Matters proceeded happily until midnight, when the rosary was said. Not a solitary titter was heard while the holy recital was in progress. With regards to serving food, there was no formal procedure. Buffet rules were loosely applied, but there's no evidence of hogging. One associates with such activities of higher levels. Meanwhile, outside, the contents of the huge cauldron gurgled and spluttered. From time to time, the King of the Wren Boys and his queen, the gracious Maggie, inspected the interior and intimated the interested parties that all was going according to expectations. Now, all this happened at a time when motor cars were first to be making their appearance all over the countryside. And so the wives of these inexperienced drivers entertained genuine worries about the fitness of their partners to handle highly deceptive vehicles while under the influence. So to counteract the effects of the drinking, Billy Bonner hit on the idea of the soup. It was the third year of the innovation, and it had proved highly successful. There had been no accidents, no injuries, and if the drivers ended up in dikes and ditches, no great harm done to the cars or the occupants. In part, this would have been due to the shallowness of the roadside hazards, but generally, it was accepted it was largely due to receiving the concoction so carefully prepared by the wives of the Wren Boys. It was widely believed that Billy added a secret ingredient to the cauldron during the latter stages of the boiling, but whenever this was true or not, it was really never determined. There was, however, on a particular occasion, an unexpected addition to the concoction. It was most fortuitous supplementation that came about in the most unusual manner. On top of the cauldron was two fat slabs. These would have been removed from time to time to facilitate stirring, with occasionally rinsed by a long-handled coarse brush, which Billy and Maggie Bonner used with expertise that made no concession to the clotting or coying, which is so decremental to the consistency of such natures. So, I'm going to leave it there and take a quick break, and we're going to listen to one of the songs that may have been sung in Billy Bonner's kitchen, and this is the Clancy Brothers and the Fury Brothers with the Wren song.
The Clancy Brothers! Beer, 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 beer!
The Wren, the king of our horses, his team is near, was not in the fours, although he was little, his honour was great, your bumpy lads, and give us a treat, and they was going to kill, and all I had to run upon the wall, up and be waddle, and up and down, and brought him into Carrickdown, crawling, crawling, where's your nest, is in the bush, the veil of mist, in the tree, the holly tree, where all the boys do follow me.
Welcome back to Capital Irish on 106.1 FM, and you're listening to the Clancy Brothers and the Fury Brothers doing the Wren song while Liza Minnelli was also present, which is an unusual mix if ever there was one. So where we left off in the Bonner household, they were throwing this massive Wren party and it was going in full pelt, and we pick up the story as the soup was well on the way to being ready in the morning. Now, as it so happened, the large grey cat, which spent most of its time stretching itself and licking its whiskers in the vicinity of the rooftop chimney, which was part and parcel of the feline makeup, as cats go, the grey Tom was a respected figure in the countryside. In his younger days, he'd be known to roam far and wide in search of diversions, and sometimes disappearing for days at a time. Now, well advanced in years, he had become more of an ogler than an adventurer, and contented himself with maintaining a rooftop vigil during the day, an occasional romantic saunter apart, but mostly hugging the kitchen hearth by the night. He found, as many tomcats do in the years mounting, that dabbling suits of their age and temperament far better than full-time fornication, and when the young toms, and in which young toms wantonly indulge. From early morning on the eventful day, he knew something was afoot. In the younger days, he would have made non-stop forays into the kitchen, making a general nuisance of himself, and resulting in testing the patience of his mistress and her co-workers. Nowadays, nothing short of a cat invasion would lure him from his cosy precincts in the chimney. Towards the evening, he betook himself to leisurely downward and did the rounds of his domains. Elderly cats never indulge in exaggerating slinking or fancy oscillations to which younger cats are addicted. They tend to slouch and sit. They start taking things for granted, and this is always a mistake. For the years, the grey Tom leapt without difficulty on the slabs which covered the cauldron. The contents had not yet begun simmering, but an appetizing odour issued upwards nevertheless. He peered between the slabs, but only darkness greeted his gaze. He sniffed appreciatively, and he would have sat for a while, had it not a young female swung a wet dishcloth in the direction advising him at the same time that he should make himself scare if he knew what was good for him. Unhurriedly, he leapt down and made his way to the outhouse, where there was always an outside chance of an encounter with an unwary mouse. The outhouse was empty, so he sat for a while, preening himself in the shadows. He recalled past encounters with pretty cats beyond the boundaries of Tubern Law and the nearer home and passing years that had confined him. Darkness fell and he sat immobile. With the darkness came a hard frost, which decided him on his next move. He would discreetly explore the kitchen and partake of some supper before returning to lie in the lee of the chimney for an hour or two. Indoors, the festivities were at their height. Young members of the Tubern Law Wren Boys had begun circulating on a regular basis, with fresh filled buckets of stout drawn from the half tierce, and there was just been breached. Pannies and mugs and cups, as well as glasses, canisters, jam pots, ewers, were pressed for service. Even the grey tomcat was drawn into the revelry. He mewed for more after he lapped up a partially filled saucer of stout. He took his time over the second saucer, purring uncharacteristically abandoned as the drink began to take hold. Finishing the saucer, he staggered out into the moonlight night. Stars twinkled in every corner of the heavens and the full moon shed its pale light on the cobble yard. The tomcat leapt and landed on the smaller of the slabs. He was assailed by giddiness for a moment or two, but recovered, and sat himself on the larger of the two slabs. He savoured the tantalising odour which held between the space between the slabs. Finding a larger slab, a trifle too hot, he moved himself onto the smaller, and arched himself drunkenly before composing himself like a cat for a short segue into the hustle and bustle of the kitchen. For the second time that day, he lapsed into revelry, which saw him in his heyday seducing she-cats at every turn and devouring fish and liver between bouts of sleep. It could be truthfully claimed there wasn't a happier tomcat in the whole of Tubern Law that night. He had a chance imposed upon himself at the blissful scene. The sleeping Tom, neither his fingers nor his shadows, as he slept, impervious to the comings and going near the house. He did not see the drunken youths who appeared entering the moon-drenched haggard for no purpose other than to ease the strain on their overpressed bladders. When their business had been completed, they yelled loudly in unison at the unimpressive moon, and finding no response forthcoming from that quarter, they looked around for some other form of diversion. Then they beheld the sleeping cat. "Look," said the drunker of the pair. "Look at the neck of the cat sleeping on top of the soup." "Let him be," said the other one. "What harm's he doing?" "Suppose," said the companion in an outraged tone, "he piddles into the soup, or maybe worse." The pair tiptoed noiselessly until they reached the turf reek, which dominated the far of the haggard. They located two small black turf sods, and taking aim, dispatched both in the direction of the slumbering Tom. The chance of either reaching his target in any reckoning must surely extract the odds of 33-1. The first of the small but rock-hard missiles veered left and landed harmlessly in the farmyard dung heap. The second sped unerringly towards its victim. As it raised its head, instinctively alerted by a sixth sense, it was, alas, too late. The sod laid on the crown of its head and laid it senseless. It slumped and slid between the slabs, and it subsided without a meow into the simmering soup. The buck who pelted the fatal sod turned at once and rejoined the revels in the kitchen. He saved his conscience by making the sign of a cross and spitting over his left shoulder. Wisely, he and his friend decided to keep the story of the tomcat's demise to themselves. Why waste a perfectly good barrel of soup? Such was the philosophies that were in the air at the time and at that place. A cat could be replaced in due course, but a cauldron of soup, in the circumstances, it could not. In the kitchen, the revelry went unabated until dawn. At 8:45 in the morning, Billy Bonner stood on a chair and announced that it was time to bring the proceedings to a close. The announcement was made 7 hours and 14 minutes after the demise of the family cat. At first, there were some minor protestations, but common sense prevailed, and especially when the head of the house reminded them that the soup was ready and it would be served forthwith, and served under the wide starry sky. And those who were interested should proceed without delay and bring with them whatever vessel they had in their hand. There was an immediate exit. Mugs, cups, canisters were all waved aloft and delighted revellers' cheers at their might anticipation of the incomparable composition that awaited them. There were gasps and cheers and screams and diversion exclamations and delighted as the mug and mug after canister of soup was consumed. Steam from hundreds of months, nostrils, receptacles, ascended into the frosty air. And while the cauldron itself issued a perpendicular column disappeared into the heavens, overhead tempted the moon herself to indulge in an unprecedented descent from her starry climes. Standing to one side in the shadows were the youths who had unceremoniously dispatched the cat to the hereafter. They hugged their sides with glee and they eagerly awaited convulsions and upheavals, which they felt must be inevitable assail as the soup drinkers in Tubern Law and its hinterland. They waited, but nothing transpired. As the time passed and the morning brightened, it was a clamorous demand from all presents for more soup. As things turned out, there was plenty for everyone. The cauldron was drained and the last drop of Billy Bonner and retaining spilled out the bare bones that remained into the frozen ground. The cat killers edged forwards, but before they could draw a solitary person attention to the fact that they had all partaken in cat soup, the evidence was quickly proved as three household dogs, the red setter, the collie, and the retired coursing greyhound, fled the scene with mouthful of bones, ranging from the head of the grey tomcat to hock bones and bullock and heifer. They would return almost at once to recover the lesser bones that remained and add them to the others they had secreted, and none but themselves would find them. Search as they might, the disgruntled cat killers failed to find the trace of their victim. Nothing remained, not an eye, not a tooth, nor a single solitary cat whisker, nor any evidence whatsoever of the nine lives with the God-given right of all cats, great and small. So, that was the interesting story of the Wren Knight and the cat killers and the Billy Bronner soup. Before I hand over, I'm just going to say a quick rundown of a few events happening tonight in the Hut. They usually have a monthly potluck dinner, but the Hut Valley Irish Society this month are replacing it with a picnic in Williams Park. It's a BYO, so obviously with COVID restrictions, come with your food. It's a great idea. And if it's raining, I'm sure there'll be an option to maybe pop back into the club. And on the 4th of December, there's also the GAA Beach Tournament held in Oriental Bay. And I think they're starting at 10 a.m. and the rules are it runs until the finals or until the tide comes in, whichever comes first. So head on down there for the 4th of December. I'd like to thank you all so much for listening. I hope you have a safe and wonderful holiday season. And I'm going to play you out with a song befitting of Billy Bronner's cat. And this is The Cure with Love Cats.
Love cats. You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.